Coming up is the news.
Israeli settlers killed and four others are injured in a shooting operation near the northern West Bank town of Jericho. Iran's top diplomat says the UN Human Rights Council has turned into an instrument of foreign policy by a number of countries led by the US. Also ahead, Britain and the European Union agreed to overhaul trade rules in Northern Ireland, easing tensions triggered by Brexit. Thank you for joining us. Our top story, an Israeli settler has been shot dead near the northern West Bank town of Jericho or Ariha in a retaliatory operation. According to Palestinian sources, the shooting occurred in the Beit Har Araba junction in the Jordan Valley. A second shooting took place later on in an area close to the first one, leaving at least four people in critical condition. Israeli media has confirmed the two attacks near Jericho. The regime's forces have closed several roads in the Jordan Valley to arrest the attackers. Palestinians have recently stepped up retaliatory attacks against Israeli targets over the regime's increasing acts of aggression and brutality in the occupied territories. The Iranian foreign minister has slammed some Western states for double standards regarding human rights. Hossein Amir Abdullahian was addressing the 52nd session of the Human Rights Council in Geneva. He blamed the council for turning into an instrument of foreign policy by a number of countries led by the US. The top diplomat underscored genuine dialogue, constructive interaction, and respectful cooperation as the basis for promoting human rights. Amir Abdullahian also touched on the recent foreign-backed riots in Iran. He described a number of Persian-language US and UK-based TV channels as promoters of violence. He said the Islamic Republic has always been at the forefront of countering terrorism in the region. Amir Abdullahian also reiterated Iran's commitment to safeguarding and promoting human rights, vowing that the administration will strongly defend the rights of the Iranian nation. We spoke to journalist and political commentator Saeed Mohsen Abbas. He told us about the US and the West's double standards vis-a-vis anyone who opposes or challenges them.
Wherever the interests or the economic and political interests of the Zaire Western axis are threatened or challenged, there is no human rights as far as they're concerned. They will exercise any kind of violence, both psychological, political, cultural, or social, and in fact, ultimately, military as well. And you can see that the double standards manifest. Two nations in particular really epitomize it, and they are the partner nations of these very hypocritical Western Zaire Western powers, Israel being one and Saudi Arabia being the other. Daily we see Palestinian killings and we see the abuse of women and the abuse of children, the torture and the torment that's been going on for decades. Not a squeak comes out of these same human rights institutions and organizations to pull up Israel. They're allowed to be exceptionalized and get on with whatever they want to do in terms of violating human rights. Saudi Arabia is the other major partner of the Anglo-Zionist Empire, especially in West Asia, of course. Jamal Khashoggi being chopped up hasn't been a problem, nor is it a problem that the Yemeni people are blockaded, starved, and mutilated in any shape and form. All of this with the logistics of these same hypocritical Zionist Western powers blessing.
Two Iranian Navy ships have docked in Rio de Janeiro despite U.S. pressure to bar them. The Macron and the Dina Navy vessels arrived in Brazilian waters on Sunday morning after the government granted them permission. The two vessels left Iran's southern waters in early fall with the purpose of sailing around the world. They are expected to break the record for the distance an Iranian flotilla has covered in international waters. The two ships have been sanctioned by the U.S. Earlier this month, the U.S. ambassador to Brazil urged the government of President Da Silva not to allow them to dock. During his previous presidential terms, Lula ramped up diplomatic engagements with Iran as part of his attempts to bolster Brazil's international standing. Canada says it will be imposing sanctions on senior members of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps over what it calls human rights violations. Canadian Foreign Minister Melanie Joly has announced the names of 12 officials that also include members of the law enforcement. This is in addition to the numerous sanctions Canada has already imposed on several individuals and entities associated with Iran's armed forces. The IRGC has recently been the target of a campaign by anti-Iran elements. Last month, the European Parliament called on the EU to list the IRGC as a terrorist entity. This, while European leaders have admitted there is no legal ground for such measures. Tehran has repeatedly blasted Western countries for double standards on human rights, reminding them of the effective role of the IRGC has played in fighting terrorism in the region. Tehran has hosted the first memorial of Martyrs of Resistance Media, entitled Narrators of Resistance. In an address to the event, head of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting, Peyman Jabili, said resistance is not a cost, it is an investment. Our very own correspondent Saman Kujuri reports.
The first memorial of Martyrs of Resistance Media, entitled Narrators of Resistance, has been held in the Iranian capital, Tehran. The families of media martyrs from Iran, Iraq, Yemen, Syria, Afghanistan, Palestine, and Lebanon attended the event. Addressing the ceremony, the commander of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps Quds Force, Brigadier General Ismail Ghani, praised the Martyrs of Resistance Media as a treasure which must be well invested.
The media presence of our martyrs makes them convey the sublime values that led them to achieve the goal of martyrdom. The global arrogance led by the U.S. promotes that those who own money and the biggest weapons are to emerge victorious in wars. However, despite its limited capabilities, the media of the resistance front succeeded in conveying the voice of truth.
Moreover, speaking at the event, head of the IRIB, Dr. Jabili, honored the media martyrs on the resistance front.
In hard war, the enemy seeks to destroy our fortifications and force us to retreat from one place to another. But in soft war, the enemy does not use weapons, bombardment, and physically does not seek to push us back from one area to another, but seeks to mislead us, change our thinking, distort reality, and take us away from the straight path. We proudly pay for our resistance, but I would like to say that resistance not only costs nothing, but is a total investment. The participants believe that along with the war launched against the axis of resistance in the military sphere, the U.S. and the Zionist regime have also been using all means in the media sphere to undermine the resistance.
The participants believe that along with the war launched against the axis of resistance in the military sphere, the U.S. and the Zionist regime have also been using all means in the media sphere to undermine the resistance. Journalists of resistance media, as the narrators of resistance and truth, shed light on the realities on the ground in conflict zones, the realities which have been repeatedly ignored by mainstream media outlets of the West, led by the United States. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
Egypt's foreign minister has paid an official visit to the Syrian capital, Damascus, where he held talks with top officials over the repercussions of the earthquakes as well as bilateral relations. Mohammed Ali has more on that.
Egypt's foreign minister Sameh Shoukry has met Syrian President Bashar al-Assad in Damascus. In the meeting, the top diplomat conveyed Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi's message of solidarity to Assad and all Syrians affected by the recent earthquakes. He also expressed Cairo's keenness on bolstering historic relations between Syria and Egypt, as well as boosting joint cooperation. Assad, for his part, thanked Egypt for sending humanitarian assistance, asserting that improving bilateral ties among Arab states constitute the foundation for improving the situation in general in the Arab world. Shoukry stressed that Egypt-Syria relations are a basic factor in the security of Arab countries. He also reiterated his country's support for Syria.
Egypt has offered so far 1,500 tons of assistance and will continue to provide all humanitarian assistance needed. Relations between both nations are strong. Egypt supports Syria in facing challenges. We hope Syria overcomes the repercussions of the earthquakes as soon as possible.
Shoukry also held a separate meeting with his Syrian counterpart, in which Faisal al-Maqdad briefed him on the steps taken by the Syrian government for helping Syrians affected by the earthquakes. Al-Maqdad also thanked Egypt for its unwavering aid to Syrians since day one of the earthquakes.
We welcome Egypt's foreign minister, who is visiting his home, people and country. His talks with President Assad focused on the results of the earthquakes and the historic relations between both countries. Egypt played a significant role in assisting Syrians following the earthquakes.
The visit comes a day after a historic trip by several senior lawmakers of Arab parliaments to Damascus, who affirmed they will push their governments for restoring relations with Syria. That's amid an increase in such moves by Arab states. This is the first visit for an Egyptian foreign minister to Syria since the start of the crisis in 2011. It's a clear indication of Egypt's serious intention to gradually restore normal ties with the Arab country. Hamad Ali, Damascus.
Well, journalist and political analyst Elijah Magnea talks about how Syria and the Syrian people have been neglected, especially in the wake of the devastating earthquake.
What they're trying to say to Syria, we're coming to see you, but we still don't have the full support to restart the reconstruction. Syria needs between $500 and $800 billion to be reconstructed. The Arab didn't invest anything. It's only a bit shy Russian support on the military side, but a lot of Iranian support. Every 15 days, there is a tanker of oil. There is a humanitarian support that's coming through the border on a very regular basis. Where are the Arabs and the Gulf-rich countries? They don't dare to support Syria because Syria is still under the sanctions, still under Caesar sanctions, and the Americans are shying away their interest in Syria, although they are present in stealing the Syrian oil and the Syrian food basket. If they really want to support Syria, they just can leave and end their occupation and allow the Syrian to benefit from their own natural resources. So the return of the Arab is really a visit of a foreign minister is not really a big event if it is not followed by a serious plan of reconstructing Syria.
Turning elsewhere, Britain and the European Union have proclaimed what they call a new chapter in post-Brexit relations after securing a deal to regulate trade in Northern Ireland. British Premier Rishi Sunak considers the deal as a turning point for the people of Northern Ireland. Speaking at a news conference with European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen, Sunak said this is the beginning of a new chapter in UK-EU relationship. Von der Leyen agreed it marks a new chapter after more than a year of fraught talks. Sunak claims the deal dismantles a de facto customs border that had sprung up in the Irish Sea, both to protect the EU single market and a hard-won peace in Northern Ireland agreed 25 years ago. The UK government must now sell the deal to pro-British parties in Northern Ireland and to staunch supporters of Brexit in the Conservative Party. Sunak said the deal would be submitted to a vote in the UK Parliament at an appropriate time. Meanwhile, Britain's major supermarket groups have been called in by the government to discuss the country's shortage that's entered a third week. The Food and Farming Minister will meet bosses of Britain's major grocers later today. Several supermarket groups have imposed customer purchase limits on tomatoes, cucumbers, and peppers. That after supplies across the supermarket sector were hit by disrupted harvests in southern Europe and North Africa due to unseasonable weather. The crisis has been exacerbated by less winter production in greenhouses in Britain and the Netherlands because of high energy costs.
Tomatoes, one of your five a day. Supermarket giants in the UK are now only allowing three of these and other salad ingredients to their customers. And where there is availability, you'll have to pay a premium, especially when it comes to out-of-season fresh produce. Here is why.
Starting with climate change, 2022 was the second hottest year in Europe. Heat waves and extreme temperatures in Spain, one of Europe's biggest food producers, have meant fewer crops to harvest. The same problem with supplying countries such as Morocco in North Africa. But the UK has its own well-established food industry. One important component of it, greenhouses, many hectares of which now lay barren.
There is a problem, of course, with the high price of gas that is used to heat up these greenhouses. They do require quite a lot of gas input, and that's quite expensive. And the problem is that the supermarkets are also being very tough on pricing. So it's not easy to then raise your prices and get what you want from the supermarkets. And so rather than produce anything at a loss, some producers have obviously decided not to produce at all.
And the UK faces another particular issue. Most of its fruit and veg come from the European Union. The country's exit from the bloc has meant extra costs and bureaucracy added to the strain, especially on the supply of perishable goods.
Brexit has caused a shortage of labour, and a shortage of labour means a shortage of fruit and vegetables at the end of the day. More bureaucracy, and more bureaucracy means more costs, and more costs mean less profits, and therefore lower UK production. It's as simple as that.
The solution, food producing organisations say, is for the government to provide more support, such as replacing high-carbon fertilizers with low-carbon alternatives, or investing more in soil-free indoor growing techniques, such as vertical farming. Saeed Purza, London.
That brings an end to the International Bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
The bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure.
Hello.
IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Condemning the recent resolution to the United Nations against Moscow, the Russian authorities announced that the West, by exploiting Ukraine, seeks to destroy Russia and take away its independence. They said these efforts are doomed to fail. In response to Russia's special operation in Ukraine, the United States and Western countries have imposed extensive sanctions against Moscow and sent billions of dollars of weapons and military equipment to Kiev. We take a look at some of the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. Russia Today, the RT network, has covered this story and tells us more. The United Nations General Assembly has asked Russia to withdraw its troops from Ukraine and prioritize on finding a diplomatic solution to the crisis in the former Soviet state as the US imposed fresh sanctions on Moscow. A two-thirds majority of the United Nations body, who met for a special session of the United Nations General Assembly on Thursday, 23rd of February, voted 141 for and 7 against, while the rest, including heavyweights China, India and Iran, chose to abstain from the vote, in favour of a resolution that demanded Russian troops withdraw from Ukraine. Vasily Nebenzia, Moscow's permanent envoy to the organisation, said following the resolution, passed on Thursday, the non-binding anti-Russian resolution of the UN General Assembly will not bring the world closer to ending the Ukraine conflict. Ahead of the vote, Vasily Nebenzia slammed it as detrimental to the prospects of ending the conflict. The Russian diplomat said, "How can United Nations members aid a peaceful resolution to the heightened contradictions between Russia and the West? We can say with certainty the tabled resolution will surely not help." The UN General Assembly rejected an amendment proposed by Belarus that urged countries to refrain from sending weapons to the zone of the conflict and called for the start of peace negotiations. Moscow launched its operations in Ukraine exactly a year ago, citing the need to protect the people of Donbas, a predominantly Russian-speaking region of eastern Ukraine, and Kiev's failure to implement the 2014-2015 Minsk Peace Accord. Speaking before the UN General Assembly meeting, Vasily Nebenzia reiterated that Russia launched its special operation in order to end the 8-year war waged by the Kiev authorities against the people of Donetsk and Luhansk. The Donetsk and Luhansk People's Republics broke away from Ukraine shortly after the 2014 Western-backed coup in Kiev. The two republics, together with two other former Ukrainian regions, eventually joined Russia after holding referendums in September. The website of Press TV has also covered this story and tells us more. Iran's ambassador and permanent representative to the United Nations expressed Tehran's readiness to establish a group of cross-regional countries to help end the conflict in Ukraine, which marked its first anniversary on Friday, 24th of February. Amir Said Iravani made the remarks while addressing the UN General Assembly's 11th emergency special session on the Ukraine conflict on Thursday. Iravani said that Tehran supports the idea of leveraging the Secretary General's capacity, as mandated by the United Nations Charter, to establish a cross-regional group of independent, competent, impartial countries. The Islamic Republic of Iran is ready to contribute to this process. Amir Said Iravani added, "This can facilitate dialogue and help find a way out of the current impasse." Iravani stressed that Iran's position with regards to the war in Ukraine has not changed. "We are steadfast in our commitment of upholding the principles and purposes enshrined in the Charter of the United Nations, including the principles of sovereign equality and territorial integrity of all countries." The Iranian diplomat added, "We urge all parties to fully comply with their obligation under international humanitarian law, including taking constant precautions to protect civilians and critical infrastructure and facilitating access to safe and unfettered access to humanitarian aid for those who are in need. noting that the ongoing conflict is detrimental to both parties as neither can earn any long-term advantage. Irabani added that it is crucial for all involved parties to abandon the military ambitions and prioritize finding a peaceful diplomatic resolution of the conflict. Amir Said Irabani also pointed to the need to solve the root causes of the conflict. He said, by prioritizing dialogue and diplomacy and addressing the underlying cause of the conflict, we can take a crucial step towards achieving a solution that not only mitigates the devastating humanitarian part, but also restores regional stability and security. Irabani added, as a first step, we call for an immediate and comprehensive ceasefire, coupled with the provision of humanitarian aid to those in need, which should take precedence over all else. The Iranian diplomat also criticized the draft of the proposed resolution, saying, unfortunately, the proposed text falls short of comprehensively and impartially addressing all aspects of the issue and fails to acknowledge the conditions and provocations that have contributed to this crisis. He noted that the actions and policies of certain sponsors of this resolution raised doubts about the political will to resolve the dispute peacefully. Russia has been carrying out a special operation in its neighbor since last February. Moscow says the operation aims to stop Kiev's persecution of pro-Russian population in eastern Ukraine and to denazify the ex-Soviet Republic. The Republic World website has also covered this story and tells us more. The United States has announced sweeping sanctions aimed at increasing economic pressure on Russia and reducing Moscow's access to critical technologies such as semiconductors as the war in Ukraine enters its second year. In a statement on Friday, 24th of February, the White House said the sanctions, which target sectors including banks and the defense industry, affect more than 200 individuals and entities, including both Russian and third country actors across Europe, Asia, and West Asia who support Russia. The Biden White House said among those subject to new sanctions, which come on top of multiple layers of previous measures imposed over the last 12 months, will be a dozen Russian financial institutions, in alignment with allies and partners, as well as Russian officials and proxy authorities operating in Ukraine. The White House said today's action would result in increased tariffs on more than 100 Russian metals, minerals, and chemical products worth approximately $2.8 billion. It will also significantly increase costs for aluminium that was smelted or cast in Russia to enter the U.S. market. In the statement on the occasion of the anniversary of the Russia-Ukraine conflict, NATO's military alliance said it is increasing its political and practical support to Ukraine and will continue the aid as long as necessary. Meanwhile, the European Council, which brings together European national leaders, announced in a statement that the European Union will not rest until Ukraine wins the war with Russia. The Council has emphasized that it will continue to support Kiev along with its international partners until it ensures that Ukraine will win against Russia. Meanwhile, the Kremlin has repeatedly warned that the Western sanctions and Western military assistance for Kiev will only prolong the war.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. This is IRIB English Radio. You are listening to the program of Your Point, and I'm Beta, the host of today's episode. And we have two dear speaker guests here with me, Brother Ali and Brother Muhammad. Welcome. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
So, in this episode of today, we're going to discuss one of the most controversial issues of Islamic world about Palestinian issues. So, as you know, Palestine is one of the most valuable lands and regions in Islam thoughts and also other religions. So, in this episode, based on the leadership statements, we're going to discuss this issue.
She's standing on the rubble of her home. She cries out for her parents.
Since the Nakba in 1948, the Palestinians have been in a vicious cycle of exile, expulsion, relocation.
This training gives us the skills and expertise to help us pursue a successful career in the future and helps us in the day-to-day life.
The youth are the same, but the circumstances around them have changed. The harsh realities faced by the youth nowadays makes life harder for them compared to previous generations. With the current limitation, the youth have a hard time achieving their aspirations and dreams.
First of all, let's start with the history of this land and also the importance of this issue in the Islamic world.
First is that Palestine itself is a Muslim country, and it was usurped by another group of, let's say, people, a group of nations, let's say, and with the access of UK. So they tried to appoint a part of the world and actually make a theory about it and to call it, let's say, the land of promised land, and make a, let's say, ideological background for this, and it's starting to transfer the Jews from different countries to this country. Second, it was one of the important Islamic centers because it was the first Qibla of the Muslims. So it is important for us because it is related to our Islamic beliefs. The Masjid al-Aqsa, which is one of the first Qibla of the Muslim, is located there. The third point that I can refer to is that there is a danger of improvement and progress of a fake country in the center and in the heart of the Islamic land.
Okay, got it. That as we all know, security is one of the most important issues in everybody's life. But as you know, this isn't kind of external thing that we are talking about. This is not about our own country. This is not about our own home. And even in our own country, we have many problems, countless problems, like, I don't know, the prices, the economy, and so on. And I think we can make them as priorities. Why don't we choose them? Why just we are emphasizing and we are putting emphasis on this, that, okay, Palestine is in danger. We all know that it is in danger, but we are in danger too in different ways.
Are you going to answer?
No, you go ahead.
That's a good question, sister. Look, the agency of the issues are seen and are decided based on the, as we agreed earlier, based on the their agency towards our life. Yes, we have also some economic issues.
Yeah.
But in case we are going to support, and we are saying that we need to support Palestine and the oppressed nation of Palestine, it doesn't actually conflict with the urgent issues that we have inside the country. Look, among the urgent issues that we have in our country is economy, is, I don't know, political issues, as, again, I don't know, agricultural issues. Again, one of other issues that we it's of high importance for us is our security. But it is very important that when we are we ourselves actually are claiming to support the Palestinians, and we even ask other countries to support Palestinians. Yeah. It's not going to be any reduction from the other sources. only, I mean, the kind of budget, at least in our country, is like this. Yeah. The kind of budget which is going to be dedicated to the defense budget, or is known as the defense budget, is going to for supporting the Palestinians. But for other countries, for those countries that they are Muslims, but the country itself or the management or the team or the, let's say, statesmen are not Muslims. Yeah. So we are at least expecting them to show their hatred towards the oppression of these Muslims, yeah, in case they are not able to support like ours. But we believe other Muslim countries, there is no need for them to take from their own people and to add it and or to put it there. Even though in Islamic teachings, when we are going to support and help a person in need, geography is not going to work. I mean, we are helping a person in need. First, a person, not a Muslim.
Yeah.
Second, a Muslim in need without looking at the geographical borders, right? I'm not to ask you that if you're living in this geography or the other one.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, although we are able to, for example, reduce among from the other sources of ours, but at least in our country, it's not. It's like this. The only budget that goes towards this country is from the defense budget.
Even further than that, we can say the question that you asked is about, it's like asking, why do we make mosques when we have a lot of poor people that exist in the society?
Yeah.
Why do we build schools when the people don't even have food? So everything has its own priority, its own level. So having economic issues, if economic difficulties, does not necessarily mean that we forget about defense. Having security issues does not necessarily mean that we forget about economy and just focus on this. No, every single thing has its own level of priority. And every single matter, every single issue must be dealt with on its own level. So the level of Palestine when it comes to foreign security, when it comes to defending outside the border of this country, then definitely there must be a budget for this. Likewise, there should be a budget for, you know, looking after the schools, looking after the economy of the country. So nothing is subtracted from any area, everything in its own level and priority.
More interesting is that when we even scrutinize the other problems that we have, like, let's say, economic issues, the problems that we have, if we work on the roots of these issues, it refers to this cancerous complex which is in this region. Why? Because the whole West has actually besieged its own powers just to support this area, to this country, and this what they had actually devised and what they made it there. So we see even all these problems that are available in Islam countries are due to this existence. Look, if you see insecurity in Lebanon, in Yemen, in other countries, is because due to the force that America puts on, for example, some proxies in the region to make the region in a state of turmoil, then it is quite clear among the politicians that they say that if you want Israel to be secure, you have to make the other countries insecure.
Yeah.
You see? So the insecurity of other Islamic countries works for the security of the... So how can you make a country insecure? To work on its economy, to work on its, let's say, political issues, its, let's say, different agriculture and in different areas of energy that they are in need of.
In this level, we can say that, concluding the words of Mr. Ali, is that removing Israel from the from its existence, you know, by annihilating it, we solve so many problems, including the economic problems that we have in our country.
Yeah. So let me ask another question, which is on mine, really. And I want you to answer that if, you know, for example, it wasn't Palestine, it was about some oppression in other regions like China, like other places that, that we have some Muslim people. Why don't we make them as priorities? If it is about an act of humanity, so it is the same about other places, other geographical parts of the world. So why these parts of the world is so important? Why this region?
First of all, let me say that wherever we see oppression, we're against it. We were against apartheid, even though they were not Muslims, but we were against this discrimination, this racial discrimination. We are against fascism. We are against white supremacism. Any form of discrimination, racism, we're against it. We're against the rulers who have usurped Kashmir. We're against the rulers who are dictating Bahrain. But when it comes to priority, we have to see that Muslims, how are they targeted, right? Mm-hmm. In Palestine, like we mentioned in the beginning of the discussion, in Palestine, there is a reason why they brought this Zionist movement in that specific area, in the heart of Islam, right? Yeah. Where civilization initially emerged, according to the historians, right? There is a reason why it's there. And when you see, like we mentioned just, you know, a few seconds ago, when we see insecurities in other places, including in the region, including our own country, yeah, it's because of Israel. When we remove this cancer, like we mentioned in the beginning, then many other places will be secured. There will be, when the victory of Islam prevails in Palestine, you will not find, or at least you will find less people, less wise countries or wise systems that will attack Islam, because they know that Muslims have a good connection between each other. They know that if they were to attack the Muslims, they're going to be faced with a big wave of Muslims coming against them.
Thank you. Let me add another dimension to the explanations, yeah, of Brother Muhammad. Yes, there are some other Muslims who are under oppression in Chechnya or even in China. Yes, that's true. We believe we have to actually, we should not, I mean, differentiate between the Muslims if they are living in different areas of the world. And we did so, exactly. Yeah. I mean, at the time of the presidency of Mr. Khatami, he showed his objection towards the behavior of the Russia with the Chechenian Muslims. The same time, I mean, different governments actually show their disagreement, show their objection to even China at the same way that they are actually treating the Muslims there, like sermon that was held by Ayatollah Hashemi Rafsanjani, the late Ayatollah Hashemi Rafsanjani, yeah, that he directly actually warned Chinese government to treat Muslims in the right way. So we see that we have exactly our bright and quite vivid stances in front of these issues. But you might say, okay, they are weaker with regard to what we see in the issue of Palestine. That's true. Do you know what the reason is? The reason is that in the issue of Palestine, we see a sort of, let's say, oppression, a sort of, let's say, taking the lands of a people, mm-hmm, and making a new country for yourself. Okay. But in the other countries, we based on the international laws, we are not going to interfere in the affairs, into the internal affairs of different countries, like in China or like what happened in Russia. So we can warn them, we can show our disagreement and objection towards them, but it's not, I think it's not the case to do the same for what we are doing in Palestine. So we see a group of people were removed from their own land,
yeah,
but we are not seeing the same thing in Russia or in China, right?
Yeah,
I mean, that is true.
Yeah. So thank you for all your explanations. If I want to refer to one of the statements of leadership. I can tell that Palestine is considered as one of the main inspiration for other Islamic uprisings in the world. And thank you for your presence here, Brother Ali and Brother Muhammad. And thank you, dear listeners, for listening to us in this episode. It was all the time we had for today's episode. And we're going to discuss this issue more in other episodes. So I bid you farewell, and I leave you in the warm embrace of Allah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every day we tell each other that this day will be the last, and tomorrow can go home free, and all this will finally end. Palestine, tomorrow will be free. Palestine, tomorrow will be free.
Father, to wipe away my tears. That's why I will cry. I feel scared, but I won't show my fears. I keep my head high, deep in my heart. I never have any doubt the Palestine. Tomorrow will be free. Palestine. Tomorrow will be free.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
In the limelight.
The war in Ukraine has created huge political, economic, and security losses for Europe, and the energy crisis caused by the Russian oil and gas embargo can be considered the most immediate and main impact of the war in Ukraine on Europe's economy. We have taken a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. Britain's Financial Times newspaper has covered this story and tells us more. Economists warn the lingering energy crisis is expected to cause further recession in the Eurozone this year. According to the latest report, prices in the region will rise by an average of over 6%, while the unemployment rate will increase from the current 6.5% to 7.1% by the end of 2023. High inflation and energy shortages will lead to a further decline in production and worsen the situation in the labour market. Subsequently, by the end of the year, the Eurozone economy will shrink by 0.01%. The energy crisis in the European Union worsened over the summer when sanctions and technical setbacks led to the first interruptions in gas supplies from Russia. While most economists have said that Europe is past the worst of the energy crisis this year, many worry that the prospect of energy rationing would return next heating season, especially if the upcoming months are cold and cause increased tapping of gas reserves. Economists are also worried about the outcome of further steps to stem inflation by the European Central Bank, the ECB. Marcello Missori, an economics professor at Lewis University in Rome, Italy, warned that further interest rate hikes could lead to a severe recession in the euro area. Agence France-Presse has also covered the same story and tells us more. Official figures showed recently inflation in Sweden surged to its highest point in the past three decades in December, fueled by soaring electricity prices that have hit the cost of living. Statistics Sweden said the Consumer Price Index, the CPI, accelerated to 12.3%, up from 11.5% in November, the highest figure since February of 1991. The main driver was the price of electricity, which rose 28.8% in December compared to the month before and 45.3% compared to a year earlier. Sweden's inflation rate adjusted for fixed interest rates, the figure used by Sweden's central bank to guide monetary policy, jumped to 10.2% on an annual basis, up from 9.5% in November. In a bid to counter soaring inflation, the Scandinavian country's central bank has sharply hiked its key interest rate in recent months, from 0% in April to 2.5% currently, with its next monetary policy meeting scheduled for early February. The bank has signalled that more increases are underway. Inflation has soared worldwide in the wake of the Russia-Ukraine conflict, which started in February of 2022, prompting central banks to hike interest rates. Turkey's Anadolu news agency has also covered the same story and tells us more. According to official data released recently, Hungary's annual inflation rate spiked to 24.5% in December, the highest level since March of 1996. The Hungarian Central Statistical Office said electricity, gas and other fuels, along with food prices, were the main drivers of high inflation in Hungary. Electricity, gas and other fuels were 55.5% more expensive in December. Food prices jumped 44.8% on an annual basis. Consumer durables jumped 13.6%. And service charges were up 9.5%. The authority said consumer prices increased by 1.9% on average in 1 month and by 14.5% on average in 2022. Compared to the previous year. China's Xinhua news agency has also covered the same story. Portugal's National Institute of Statistics announced the Consumer Price Index, the CPI, registered an average annual variation of 7.8% in 2022 in the country, the highest since 1992. Last year, the Consumer Price Index, the CPI, rose 6.5 percentage points compared to 2021, when it was 1.3%. Rising energy and food prices were the main elements contributing to the increase in the Consumer Price Index, the CPI. Portuguese inflation rose more intensely in the first half of last year, while prices slowed down in the last 2 months of 2022. According to China's Xinhua news agency, Statistics Netherlands said on Tuesday, 10th of January, the annual inflation rate in the Netherlands was 10% in 2022, the highest since 1975, when the rate was 10.2% as a result of the oil crisis. Last year, the price development of energy, such as electricity, gas and district heating, in particular contributed to the high rate. The energy was on average 114% more expensive in 2022 than in 2021. The inflation rate was 2.7% in 2021. Food and motor fuels also had an impact on inflation. Food was 10.8% more expensive than 12 months previously. In 2021, food prices were still 0.2% lower. The rise in food prices was mainly caused by meat, dairy products, bread and grains and vegetables. In 2022, motor fuels were 18.1% more expensive than the year before, while in 2021, the increase was 16.8%. The Reuters news agency has also covered the same story. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, the OECD, said on Tuesday, 10th of January, Greece's economic growth is likely to show just 1.1% this year from a 5.1% clip in 2022, as soaring energy costs and continued uncertainty about the war in Ukraine hurt spending and investments. Since the lifting of COVID restrictions, the Greek economy has recovered strongly thanks to the robust tourism revenues and improving consumer spending and investments. However, surging energy costs, supply disruptions and uncertainty, mainly because of the war in Ukraine, are sharply slowing down the recovery in Greece. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, the OECD, said, the war is directly affecting Greece's energy supply and costs. It indirectly affects our compressing spending and delaying investment and hiring. Inflation, driven by rising energy prices, hit a 30-year high of 12% last summer in Greece and is eating away at Greek households' income. Britain's Guardian newspaper has also covered the same story. The Italian government statistics office reported recently prices in Italy rose 8.1% year-on-year in 2022, with surging energy prices contributing the most to what was the largest full-year increase since the mid-1980s. The full-year rate was the highest recorded in Italy since a 9.2% annual increase in 1985, when Italy still used the lira currency. In December, prices were 11.6% higher than in the same month in 2021 and down from 11.8% in November. It was still the third highest one-month rate recorded since the introduction of the euro currency in 1999. According to the National Institute of Statistics, the seven highest monthly inflation rates recorded in Italy since 1999 have all been in the last 7 months. High energy prices have been responsible for the bulk of these increases, pushed higher by the energy supply challenges caused by the conflict between Russia and Ukraine.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.